Hey everybody, I'm back with a little weekend show here, and I want to continue our year in review series, this time looking at players that broke out in a big way after the All-Star break in February. There are some interesting players here on this list, and I think it's important to dig in and see why these players started to produce, and is it something that we can expect next season? Lots of gems in this one, so stick with me. Let's get to biz. This is Apples and Genos. You are listening to Cream of the Crop. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining me here on Cream of the Crop, a fantasy hockey podcast presented by Apples and Genos. This is our off-season content here. We're doing stuff, and it feels good. Before I get into that, yeah, obviously click the link in the description for the Apples and Genos Discord. We still got some conversations going on in there. It's a great place to be. It's my happy place. We'll get your buns in there. Also, head over to YouTube. Give us a subscribe on our Apples and Genos YouTube channel. Thank you very much. Now let's get into it though. Yeah, this is our postseason content here. I know it's been a week since I've been on the mic here, so I'm definitely missing this a little bit, but I've been enjoying the playoffs, that's for sure. Enjoying maybe isn't the right word. Canucks fan over here, so yeah, I'm just stressed all the time. Oh God, it's brutal. They just got pumped by the Oilers here in game six. Yeah, I know most people listening are maybe not Canucks fans and you don't care, but damn it, it's my podcast and I can do what I want, all right? But I'm not going to talk Canucks at all here because people wouldn't enjoy that. But yeah, off-season's been good here. Our content will start ramping up a little bit here. Right now, we're looking at doing kind of, you know, 1 to 2 episodes a week here. Once Josh starts going again, we're going to, you know, have some more content, obviously. And Nate's taking a little break too. But we're all going to get back to business here real soon. But in the meantime, I'm going to be pumping out, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 episodes a week. God, I can't help myself. So there you go. Just keep your ears open for that. It's not going to be as scheduled as it was during the regular season, but we are going to get back to that as well. But anyways, this is a fun little pod I want to do here. So as I said off the top here, I want to do some second half breakouts post All-Star break. Just see kind of who started popping off and why. And is this something we can expect moving forward, right? When I do all my research postseason, I always try and identify little advantages, right? And things that other people may not be looking at. And then obviously I want to give that all to you listeners here, to you folks, right? So we can smash our opponents, right? And hurt their feelings, right? That's on the Apples and Genos business card. So to me, second half breakouts, that's just an interesting piece to me. You know, who, like, you find different pieces in there. It's not always like the same, you know, top guys that we're always talking about, right? So second half breakouts is one I really like doing. I'm also going to be doing a playoff performers one as well. Obviously, we're only in the second round, so I got to wait a little bit there. But I always want to look at trends in the playoffs as well and see what's what. And just because of my experience, these two topics in particular, a lot of these performances in the second half of the season and in the playoffs, they sort of foreshadow what may happen next season, right? And it says a lot about who the coach trusts, right? Who's out on the ice when the season is on the line, so on and so forth, right? So, you know, when I dug in here, the top point getters after the All-Star break. So that was February 3rd. That's where I did all my stats from, February 3rd. The top 10 performers, these guys are all household names, right? So there isn't a lot of value in me doing deep dives on guys like McDavid, right? So I did go a little further down the list to, you know, unearth some real gems. And like I said, I was surprised at some of the names I found. Before I get into some of those beauties, I do want to just quickly go through the top 10 players that popped off after the All-Star break. And it's no surprise, Connor McDavid, number one overall. He played 33 games and got 65 points, smashed it, obviously. Nikita Kucherov was at number two, 32 games, 59 points. Nathan MacKinnon, 33 games, 56 points. So 1, 2, 3 makes total sense. Artemi Panarin was fourth on the list, 33 games with 54 points. And then Kirill the Thrill Kaprizov really picked up his play after the All-Star break here, 51 points in 33 games for him. Uncle Leon Draisaitl.
Hello.
Hello.
49 points in 36 games for him. Austin Matthews, 35 games. He got 49 points, including 29 goals in those 35 games. That was a really nice end of the season for Matthews. Maybe not the actual end of his season, but the end of the regular season, that's for sure. Sidney Crosby was at number 8. He had 44 points in 36 games. The guy keeps doing it. It's crazy. And then a couple of Predators round out the top 10 here. Number 9 is Philip Forsberg. He had 43 points in 31 games. Number 10 is Roman Josi. He had 40 points in 31 games. So that's obviously goes to show how well the Predators did at the end of the season there when they were really flying. They were the hottest team going into the playoffs. So there you go. So that's your top 10. But yeah, digging a little deeper, like from basically 11 to 25, there are some interesting names in there. So I'm going to get into it, but I want to just figure out, are these guys just a flash in the pan, right? Or is there something that we can hold on to and try and find some value in draft season here? So without further ado, let's do it. All right, the first player I want to talk about from the New Jersey Devils, Nico Hischier. He had a really nice end of the season here, and I was surprised how poor his first half was, actually. But what I'm going to do here, I'll try and have the same kind of format for each player. So what I've actually done is look at pre-All-Star game, post-All-Star game for their points. I've also looked at pre-All-Star game and post-All-Star game for their metrics. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'm not going to get too into the weeds on the, you know, the super detailed on these numbers here, but I just want to look at trends and try and figure out what happened there. So starting with Nico Hischier, as I said, pre-All-Star game, he had 28 points in the first 36 games. You know, a far cry from what he was able to do the previous season. And then post-All-Star game, though, he really picked up his play. He had 39 points in the final 35 games. He ended up on the season with 67 points in 71 games. He was injured a little bit. That's a 77-point pace for Nico Hischier. And he did a lot of great things, but obviously New Jersey really underachieved. You know, offensively, defensively, their goaltending was horrific. It was just a rough season there in New Jersey. Far cry from what we thought was going to happen going into this year. So let's look at some of the metrics for Nico Hischier pre-All-Star game, all right? And I'm just going through all the metrics that we like here at Apples and Genos, the predictive metrics that we think are really going to tell us how they're doing offensively, right? So before the All-Star game or leading up to the All-Star game, Nico Hischier, shots on goal per 60, he was at 6.63, which is actually really low for him. Individual Corsi 4, reasonable. Like I said, I'm not going to get into all these numbers, but the shots on goal per 60 was a big one. 6.63, that's not really normal. Nico Hischier, just in general, he had last season at 5-on-5, 9.61 shots on goal per 60. So that's a big drop off for him in his shots on goal there. And again, these numbers I'm talking about, they're going to be at all strengths. IPP for Nico Hischier, 57%, which is low for him. And his shooting percentage, though, was pretty good. It was 17.81%, and his on-ice shooting percentage was reasonable at 12.6%. So, post-All-Star game, like I said, his shots on goal per 60 before were 6.63. Shots on goal per 60 after the All-Star break, 9.07. So, big-time shot increase. He increased his Corsi for as well, so chucking pucks by quite a bit, actually. Increased his scoring chances for his individual scoring chances 4 per 60, and his IPP went up to 69%. Very nice. And again, like I said, it was 57 pre All-Star game. Shooting percentage went down a bit to 12.84, and his on-ice shooting percentage went up just a titch. So nothing crazy. But the big takeaway there is the massive increase in shots and the massive increase in individual Corsi 4 per 60. So he was putting a lot more pucks on net. He was putting a lot more pucks at the net. He was converting less, which is okay, I guess. But yeah, I mean, you got to shoot to score. It's common sense. And that number there, 9.07 shots on goal per 60, that's closer to what he does, you know, usually, right? So what really happened here with Nico Hischier? Well, obviously, Jack Hughes being injured at multiple times during the year, that didn't help Nico Hischier. He was injured on January 5th, and he was out, and he did come back after the All-Star game. So that maybe could have had an impact as to why Hischier started playing better, right? Because when you got a guy like Hughes out there, he doesn't play on the same line as Nico Hischier at even strength. So, you know, you might have to match up against Hughes, and that might equal better matchups at even strength for Nico Hischier, so he's able to have more of an impact. You know, you look at Dougie Hamilton being injured on November 28th as well. He was out for the entire season. That just affected things all around on that team, in my opinion. I just think things went off the rails a little bit. Not to mention some curious deployment that Lindy Ruff was doing in the top six and on the power play. Just weird stuff. I mean, Nico Hischier was safe, really, but I mean, it was a revolving door. Even just having Luke Hughes on the power play for the entire season, it didn't make sense. I mean, obviously it made sense when Dougie Hamilton went down, but he was doing that well before he was injured. So weird stuff. Also, what could have affected Nico Hischier here? There was a coaching change, right? Lindy Ruff did get fired eventually. Travis Green took over on March 4th. And yeah, I mean, we saw the numbers here, right? Much more productive after the All-Star game, you know, and when Travis Green got there. So that was good, but obviously, Travis Green is with Ottawa now, so another coach has to come in to New Jersey there, and it's just going to be risky-bisky a little bit for me, but the underlyings are there for a productive player with Nico Hischier. And then something just I thought was interesting is look what Nico Hischier is able to do at the Worlds right now. At that tournament, like he's lighting it up. He had 6 points. Like he's crushing right now. It's just a player that is really good offensively, and he's young and he's just getting better. So I think there's reason for optimism with Nico Hischier. That's for sure. You know, on the season in general, Nico Hischier was 179th overall on shots to goal per 60, which is not great. He was 202nd in individual Corsi 4 per 60, but he was 65th overall in individual scoring chances 4 per 60. So that's promising as well, right? He's generating a really good amount of scoring chances, or he's getting them. He's just not, he's not hitting the net first off, and his shot attempts were down as well. So needless to say, what do we do with this guy next season? I think that Hischier's floor is rock solid, right? But I am having a hard time trying to figure out how we want to project him, right? And we still have time for that. But in terms of like right now, like we're going to have a new coach in there. We don't even know who it is. So everything's going to be up in the air again. There's lots of questions with the new coach, right? Is his time on ice going to remain relatively similar? Who's he going to play with, right? Like he spent a lot of the season with, Jesper Bratt was attached to him, which was a really nice piece for Hischier. But he had Timo Meier on his wing there at times, which seemed like a really good line. That makes sense. So do they keep that line? You know, we know he's not playing with Jack Hughes, right? So does Nico Hischier keep power play one? Like Hischier had a bit of a down season on the power play, right? 17 power play points this year. That is, I would have expected a lot more, especially this guy had a 68% power play share. He was one of the guys that was actually getting the power play at in a consistent way, right? And yeah, that's a little bit of a surprise. He was only able to go for 17 power play points there. But does he still get that power play one? Does he still get that power play share? We have to wait and see, right? My gut tells me yes to all of that, right? I think his time on ice is fine. I think he's going to be deployed in the top six, and he's going to keep his power play one. Last season, he was going around 60. His average draft position was 60. And that felt a bit rich to me. I didn't get Hischier anywhere, and I won't be drafting him there next season. I don't think he'll be there, but Hischier at, you know, 85 to 95, that's starting to feel like value to me. And realistically, this is a young player on the rise. He's a captain of a great offensive team that underperformed massively, right? There's something to be said about that when a guy's a captain. Like I look at Nick Suzuki as well. Just a guy that's going to be relied on to be out there in all situations. Like obviously we know Nico Hischier is great defensively as well, similar to Nick Suzuki. You know, maybe not Montreal in general, but yeah, like they've got the trust of the coach. So being a captain of a team, I think, yeah, I put a little bit extra on the player there. So I think that's something in Hischier's favor. It stands to reason that the team is going to bounce back, and so will Hischier's individual production. Last half of this year, too, was a great showing. And nothing he did was particularly unsustainable to me. Like I said, his shots on goal, the first half, they were quite low, but they bounced back after the All-Star game. And I think that's kind of where his true number lies, right? So all said and done, I think Nico Hischier is probably a point-per-game player next season, right? But again, with all the changes that are going to go on in Jersey there, just with the coach in general, we don't exactly know what it is that's going to happen there. So take it with a grain of salt. I'm probably going to not have a lot of Nico Hischier unless his ADP is something ridiculous. And then I'm in, right? Because this is going to be a top six power play one guy, in my opinion. So there you go. Nico Hischier, big second half. Shout out to you, my man. Next up, we got to talk about Gustav Nyquist of the red hot Nashville Predators. Dang, this guy. Yeah, he came out of nowhere, really. I mean, this is a waiver wire pickup. I had him on pretty much every team I had. I dropped him. I picked him up again. I dropped him. Well, at the end of the year, this guy had 75 points in 81 games. What the hell? That's nutty stuff for Gustav Nyquist. That's a career high for him at the ripe old age of 34.
Can your grandfather do this?
Hey, ha, hoo, hey, ha, hoo, hey, ha, oh.
And I'm happy for him. I think it's great. He landed in an excellent spot after kind of bump, you know, moving around Detroit, San Jose, Columbus, Minnesota, right? Landed in Nashville. And I think he's got a great contract there. Like, he's got a really cheap contract and he's going to be in a contract year here next year, but obviously has some great chemistry with Philip Forsberg. Anyways, I'm digressing. I got to say, what the hell is going on? Yeah. So Nyquist, before the All-Star game or up to the All-Star break, he had 38 points in 51 games, which was already a good showing for Nyquist. Well, after the All-Star break, he popped for 37 points in 30 games, just went bananas. So what the hell happened there? Well, first off, he was attached to Philip Forsberg, even strength on the power play. Forsberg went nuclear. He was, like I said, the ninth best point performance post All-Star break. He's a legit, you know, late first, early second rounder in draft season next year. That's crazy to say, but great season by Philip Forsberg. So pre All-Star break, shots on goal per 60 for Gus Nyquist, middling, right? 6.76. That's not great. And again, this is at all strengths. Shot attempts per 60, 11.66, whatever. Individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 6.16. Just for reference to shots on goal per 60 and individual scoring chances 4 per 60. Once we get up around 10, that's when we're excited about a player to some degree, even at all strengths, right? But I mean, this guy's at 6.76 and then 6.16. It's not great, right? IPP for Gus Nyquist was 65.5%. Shooting percentage, reasonable, 11.76. On-ice shooting percentage was a little low, 10.16. That was all before the All-Star break. And after the All-Star break, what really happened was strange. All those metrics, they regressed a little bit. So he regressed in shots on goal per 60. He regressed in shot attempts per 60. He regressed in his individual scoring chances 4 per 60. So lower numbers than what I just read to you. But his IPP went up from 65.5 to 75.5. So that's a big jump there. His shooting percentage went up from 11.76 to 21.15 post All-Star break, right? That's massive. And then his on-ice shooting percentage went from 10.16 to 13.5. So yeah, I mean, that's, we see what happened here. Like, he actually, you know, according to the metrics, was not generating as many shots, not as many chances, but he was converting a hell of a lot more. He was involved in way more of the points there, and his teammates were converting at a crazy rate as well, right? So, you know, to me, that screams regression, okay? Unsustainable shooting percentage, right? On-ice shooting percentage, no. That is not real, right? That's a guy on a heater, right, for 30 games, and that's what happened there with Nyquist. His IPP as well was on the high side of his range at 70% on the season, and he's usually closer to 60 to 65% IPP. So I think there's a good chance that regresses a little bit too, meaning less points. But what really happened with Gus Nyquist was his performance on the power play. It was massive. He tied a career high, a number he hasn't reached since his fourth year in the league. He got 24 power play points, right? 5 goals, 19 assists. Really nice performance on the power play for Gus Nyquist. And it's a great power play. When you have Josi and Forsberg on there, plus Ryan O'Reilly, no slouch as well as a power play performer. So it kind of makes sense that he was able to go for that many points. It was definitely unexpected, but I do think it's going to regress as well, but maybe not by that much. I could still see him getting 20 power play points pretty easily, right? I just think too many things went right for Gus to have the season that he did. Obviously, Nashville went on a run. They were the hottest team going into the playoffs, as I said. But what do we do with this man next season? That's the question. And I think You know, Nyquist is going into a contract year. He's probably looking for a decent raise. If he's able to recreate even a portion of his success this season here, he's made himself fairly valuable. But in my opinion, I don't think his points, like, they're not going to fall off a cliff by any means. And his role is relatively secure. He's shown that. I like what I saw from Nyquist in the playoffs too, honestly. Like, he's a good offensive player, right? He's a good supplementary piece to, you know, Philip Forsberg, right? That guy's, you know, on an island on that team there. He's a great shot and chance generator. He's a great player. So Gus Nyquist was in the sidecar doing stuff, and he didn't look out of place there. So I think that's relatively secure. Nyquist, he reminds me of the zucchini man. Oh, you know, like for the last couple of years there, like, not a great metrics guy, but has access to great players. He's has excellent offensive acumen. I could see him putting up another 60 points, and that wouldn't surprise me, but no, I don't think this is something that I'm banking on, another 75-point season from Gus Nyquist, because he could just as easily put up a dud of a season, like 45 points, get moved down the lineup, and here we go, right? So I don't think there's going to be a lot of people crazy high on Gus Nyquist in draft season, but he's certainly not going to be on the waiver wire. I think this is a draftable player. People are going to be picking him up, looking at what he was able to do last season. And I don't think it's real. I think this is probably a 60 to 65 point player moving forward. Everything went right for Gus to get 75 points. And I don't think that's going to happen again. Book it. Next on the list, let's head over to Calgary. We got to talk about Nazem Kadri. Nice little season for this gentleman. If you look at what Kadri did on the year, he was basically the best player on Calgary, which is a weird thing to say. I mean, not when you look at their roster, but he did perform really well. 75 points in 82 games. Love that. Great shot generation. You know, decent power play performer. Good minutes. So let's dig in on what Kadri was able to do here. Pre-All-Star break, he had 39 points in 49 games, so that's okay. But it was really after the All-Star break where he took off there. 36 points in 33 games for Kadri on a really bad Calgary team. And one thing I love about Kadri, I will go into his season-long metrics here. 27th overall in shots and goal per 60 on the year. That's excellent. 26th overall in shot attempts per 60 and 34th overall in individual scoring chances for per 60. Really nice numbers for Nazem Kadri, and he does that. He's a guy that I'm actually low-key interested in as a kind of a later round pick, right? Like, this guy gets power play one, he's top six, and the metrics look really good. So this is definitely not a guy you should sleep on, that's for sure, but let's take a look at what he did pre and post All-Star break here in terms of metrics. So before the All-Star break there, shots and goal per 60 were 10.68, which is really good, right? Individual Corsi 4 per 60, 20.16. That's excellent, right? So he's chucking pucks with the best of them, hitting the net on some of them. Very nice. Individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 10.28. So really nice numbers there. IPP is solid as well at 69%. Shooting percentage was low, right? Kadri's biggest issue is his conversion, right? This guy is not an efficient shooter. So pre-All-Star break, shot at 10.06%. That show ain't no good, my man. Come on, you got to bear down. All right, bury that garbage. And then his on-ice shooting percentage was a little bit low, 10.24. So needless to say, he improved on all of those numbers. Every single metric post All-Star break there. So I'm not going to go into all of them, but there were some big numbers here. It was the on-ice shooting percentage that I really noticed. Pre-All-Star break, 10.24. Post All-Star break, 13.1, right? And on-ice shooting percentage, again, just means like what is the shooting percentage of you and your teammates when you're on the ice, right? And so 10.24, yeah, it's a little bit low, but to get up to 13.1 over those last 36 games, that's excellent, right? So what the hell happened? Sounds funny to say, and you know, especially for me because I love this man, but what about Big Cousy? He was traded there. Yeah, Big Cousy, Andre Kuzmenko was traded to the Calgary Flames January 31st and ended up on a line with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil, the Popsicle. And they cooked, right? Especially at the end of the season there. Kadri had 16 points in his last 12 games on that line. Kuzi started popping off as well with his goal scoring. So I think that sort of explains the increase in the on-ice shooting percentage for Kadri to some degree. So, I mean, you know, take that for what it's worth. I did dig in on their team metrics a little bit as well. Calgary, They were 7th best at all strengths in shot attempts, and they were 12th worst in shooting percentage at all strengths, right? So there's some luck involved there, and I think the Flames should be better at converting, right? And they were better at converting after the All-Star break, so that just kind of shows how bad they were pre-All-Star break. So that said, too, moving into next season, I do think that Kadri's production is real, and I think it's something that we can bank on. Nothing he did was unsustainable to me. This is kind of what he does, right? Like if you look at 5-on-5, what he's been able to do, these are great numbers for Nazem Kadri. He's a high IPP guy. Like 3 seasons ago, had 80% IPP. Last season with Calgary, 69. This season, 71. This is at 5-on-5. Shots and goal per 60, all right in line. Last 4 seasons, 9 and up, which is excellent. His shooting percentage at even strength was actually down this year. 6.49. That's the lowest it's been in, looks like, 8 seasons or 9 seasons, right? So there's some potential regression, positive regression at even strength for Nazem Kadri. But everything else is right in line. On ice shooting percentage, very reasonable as well at 5-on-5. So, and he's going to be a big power play performer. So I like what this guy is doing there. And I think he's still kind of an underrated player. I picked him up on waivers at certain points of the year, but I think this is a guy that's going to be relied on as one of, like, if not the main offensive player for this team, which is weird to say, but depending on what they do in the offseason. This guy's a lock for power play 1, roughly 18 to 20 minutes time on ice on every given night. You know, like I said, it's not great when Kadri's your main offensive weapon, but the Flames have kind of backed themselves into a corner a little bit with the Huberdeau contract there. They got to find a way of unlocking him and try and get some value from a guy they're paying over $10 million per. Oh, my God. So, yeah. But in terms of Kadri, I think this guy, again, should be drafted. He probably will get drafted a little bit later, but I think the future is pretty bright. He's still only 33. I could see another 70-point season in the works for Nazem Kadri, and he's a pretty durable guy as well. Last 2 seasons, 82 games apiece. So shout out to Nazem Kadri. He had a nice little year there. And shout out to Big Cousy. We got to do it. Cousy, don't ever change. All right. And number 4, I want to talk about Dylan Strome.
You son of a bitch.
Again, this is a player that sort of, he just does the thing, right? Nate and I were constantly talking about Dylan Strome in these waiver wire shows because Washington always ended up seeming to have a good schedule. And Dylan Strome was just the guy that was available. He was never really rostered very well, but I mean, he popped off. He had a great season, and it's right in line with what he's done in the past. So 67 points for Dylan Strome, played all 82 games. That's nice. You know, decent power play performance, good minutes. He had the highest time on ice of his career. He had power play 1 pretty much locked down. So it was a good season for Dylan Strome on a really bad offensive team, right? Like, it's been talked to death about the goal differential that Washington had going into the playoffs. Like, it was terrible. This team, it made no sense. Like, Charlie Lindgren, team MVP, that's really the only reason why they were able to get there and some improved play from Ovechkin down the stretch. But pre-All-Star game, Dylan Strome, he had 31 points in 47 games. That led the team, which kind of shows how bad Washington was. And then post-All-Star game, he had 36 points in 35 games. So Dylan Strome, folks, he led the Washington Capitals in points on the year. What the hell? That's wild stuff. I would not have predicted that at the start of the year, but it bodes well for Dylan Strome. And he's done it before. He got 67 points this year. He got 65 points last year. And he had more opportunity this year. So there's definitely some reason to be, you know, feeling good about Dylan Strome. Let's put it that way. So let's dig in on some of the metrics here. Pre-All-Star break, shots on goal per 60, 7.18, which is okay. I mean, individual Corsi 4 per 60, 12.45, whatever. None of these numbers are really ringing the bell here. IPP is decent, 70.45%, and his shooting percentage before the All-Star break was 19.39, which is way high. That's not sustainable, right? And his on-ice shooting percentage in the toilet, 9.05%. So after the All-Star break, interestingly enough, his shots on goal went down. So he wasn't shooting as much. His individual Corsi 4 went up a tiny bit. His individual scoring chances 4 went up a tiny bit. What really did change, though, was his IPP. It went from 70.45 pre-All-Star game to 78.26 post-All-Star game. So, and that's when Ovechkin started really popping off and putting the biscuit in the basket, right? So that sort of accounts for that, in my opinion. Shooting percentage went down from 19.39%, which I said was high, to 11.27%, which seems more kind of in line with what Strome really does. And his on-ice shooting percentage skyrocketed up from 9.05 to 12.92, as I said, with Ovi going crazy there. So the thing about Strome, he was relatively consistent all year. Like I mentioned these numbers here, but they're the ones, like I said, it was just IPP and on-ice shooting percentage and shooting percentage, which are all the luck metrics. Everything else was kind of stable across the board, right? Which is kind of something nice you can bank on in fantasy hockey. I don't mind that, even though they're low numbers. But yeah, Ovechkin obviously started popping off there, so that was a big deal with his statistics. He just spent the majority of the season with Ovechkin and Tom Wilson as well, which is not terrible. His stats from the first half to second half, they were pretty similar, right? Strome was elevated to top line center this season, which made sense. And I don't think he's giving that up anytime soon unless the Caps bring another player in here. But they sure need some help, don't they? Like, it was basically Dylan Strome and Ovechkin all year, no one else, right? Max Pacioretty, no, he's not the same after his Achilles injuries. Obviously, TJ Oshie can't stay healthy. And when he is, I mean, he's 37, right? Like, it's not something I want to bank on. They sent Kuznetsov out of town. Nick Backstrom's gone. Like, they've got some good players there, but good young players, I mean. But I don't think anyone's really ready to take a huge step. So unless they bring someone in there to Washington, it could be another ugly year offensively for the Caps. But Strome, you know, we got to sing this man's praises a little bit. He's better than average just in fantasy and even defensively as well. So I think that his time on ice is probably here to stay. Dylan Strome, again, career high, just under 18 minutes average time on ice on the season. Coach can trust him out there, so that's nice. I think 67 points, this is the type of production that this is probably where Strome lives. Like I said, unless the Caps go get someone to help shoulder the offensive load. Caps, as we said, atrocious this year at generating chances. They were six worst in the league. That's horrible. With the team without Alexander Ovechkin, that doesn't make any sense. But their offense was stale. And I think, and I'm going out on a limb here, but they need to go out and get a guy like Nick Ehlers, right? Or a guy that plays like Rupe Hintz, right? Someone who excels off the rush and is able to carry the puck in with control and set these guys up, because they just didn't have that at any point this season. And they were fairly easy to defend because of that, in my opinion. Like Ovechkin, he doesn't do that. He just goes in and sets up, right? He's too old to be doing that. And Strome doesn't do that either. He's great defensively, but he's helping the team break out. You know, he's supporting the D. So he's skating from defense to offense, where they need guys like these dynamic players that can get in on the forecheck, that can carry in with control. So that's my two cents there. This all said, I do think Strome has some room for growth, but he's going to need some help. In terms of where does he get drafted next year, he's probably still like a, you know, he got 67 points last year too, or 65, and he was still on the waiver wire. This is not a guy that was really drafted too much. So I don't know. You might be able to pick this guy up with one of your last couple picks, and you're probably going to like that. He's going to get power play one again, and I think he's going to get top deployment, right? When the Capitals were trying to get into the playoffs, Strome was playing massive minutes. He was playing over 20 minutes a night, and he looked really good doing it. He was getting all the power play time, so I kind of trust in the deployment and the opportunity more than the metrics. He's not a metrics guy, but yeah, he does the thing. So there you go. I've got two more players for you I want to talk about here, and then one honorable mention. So we will get to that, but let's do it. And the next player I want to talk about here, and probably the one I'm most excited about, Matthew Boldy. Great season for Matt Boldy. This is a guy I'm excited to talk about here, because it's a player that I really, really like. And I still think that Boldy is going to be undervalued going into draft season. This is a guy I'm going to be digging into quite a bit in the offseason here, just looking for any reason to, you know, like steam this man up. Because one thing I'm really hoping is that when draft season comes out in the ADPs, like, Matt Boldy is still massively undervalued, because I think this guy's going to be a dunk going into the year. I'm big on this man. So anyways, enough preamble. Let me get into it here. Matt Boldy on the season had 69 points in 75 games for a 75-point pace. So, yeah, that's a career high for Matt Boldy. Had amazing power play numbers again, was able to pop for 25 power play points, which is just 1 point less than he had the season previous. His time on ice went up. There's lots to like about Matt Boldy here. So let's dive in. Before the All-Star break, Matt Boldy popped for 32 points in 42 games, which is definitely a little bit disappointing. Obviously, we know what was going on there in Minnesota. Cap was injured for a little bit. They couldn't get it going, right? They were having their goaltending was terrible. And it felt like they were always, you know, trying to dig themselves out from a hole early in games. So again, 32 points in 42 games for Matt Boldy pre-All-Star break. Post-All-Star break, 36 points in 33 games. But let's look at what happened here. Something that makes Matt Boldy really exciting to me is the shot and chance generation. You'll hear me talk about it all the time. But this guy, he does that, right? And he does it in spades. So shots to go per 60, pre-All-Star break, 9.16, which is good. Individual Corsi 4 per 60, 21.09, which is elite, which is excellent, right? So lots of shot attempts. And then individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 12.01, very good as well. IPP, 61.54, reasonable. Shooting percentage, 13.79. That's decent as well. That's right in line with career numbers. And then on-ice shooting percentage, a little low, 10.36, right? Cap had a slow start, so I think that's probably what was going on there. And then after the All-Star break, I mean, he didn't go ballistic or anything, but just started to convert a little better here. So let's take a look. Shots to go per 60 did go up from 9.16 to 10.14. That's significant. Individual Corsi 4 per 60 went up. Individual scoring chances 4 went up from 12.01 to 13.16. That's excellent. IPP went up. Shooting percentage actually did go down a little bit, but the on-ice shooting percentage went up from 10.36 to 11.59. What does this all mean? It means that the team was converting a little bit better, although Boldy wasn't as well. He was shooting more. He was getting more shot attempts, more chances, right? So lots of things were going well. I think the difference in the pre and post that I just described was probably Kaprizov starting to put it together, right? He did have that monster back half in his own right, as I said, like 51 points in 33 games to finish the season for Kirill Kaprizov. And Boldy was, you know, right there for that, right? He was playing most of that time with Joel Eriksson Ek and Kaprizov as a line, right? And he did spend some time on the second line as well. So yeah, keep that in mind. But I think that Boldy has a lot more in the tank in terms of production. If you look at his individual Corsi 4, I'm going to look at some of his individual metrics here. Matt Boldy, individual Corsi 4 per 60 was 20th in the league. His individual scoring chances 4 per 60 were 10th best in the league. Matt Boldy, right? But his shots on goal per 60 were 74th overall. So he's chucking pucks. He's getting a ton of chances. He's not hitting the net, right? That's the biggest issue here with Matt Boldy, and that's evidenced by his shooting percentage. He's just not hitting the net, right? So he's still a young player. Like that sometimes happens, right? This guy's only 23. He's trying to figure it out. But to me, sooner or later, he's going to start hitting the net, right? And I think that when he does, his shot percentage is going to go up a little bit. If you look at his last three seasons, 13.3 in his rookie season, 12.2 last season, 12.8 this last season we saw here. I think there's room to grow there. That's very consistent. But he's not hitting the net. And I think that he will start hitting the net. That's just my thought. This is a guy just getting way too many chances, and he's too good of a player, right? So it's just another offseason of development. I think that, if I'm being, you know, maybe a little crazy, I don't know. I think that Matt Boldy is a 40-goal player with 90-point upside. Call me crazy. I don't know. That might be a hot take, but, I mean, nothing's going to change next season in terms of his deployment, right? He's going to eat all the offensive minutes, Matt Boldy. He's power play one. He's probably playing with Cap, but I mean, he's been able to be productive online too as well. But I think that they'll probably put him with Kaprizov. And I just think we're in on the ground floor with Boldy. Like again, 69-point season last year. I kind of love seeing that because I watched a lot of Minnesota last year because I had Cap, I had Boldy, I had Eriksson Ek on my team, I had Faber on a lot of spots. So I was watching a lot of games and this guy tilts the ice. I mean, it's quite noticeable. And I'm not the biggest proponent of the eye test, right? But this guy chucks pucks with the best of them, and he's a great skater as well. Just a really good player, and he's still so young, right? So I think, like, I look at Wyatt Johnston and what he's been able to do in the playoffs here and in the season, and he reminds me sort of where Boldy was. Like, they have kind of a concurrent projection trajectory, you know what I mean? I think Boldy's a little bit ahead of Wyatt Johnston, but I can see big things here at some point in this season coming up or the next. There just aren't that many players that can generate what Boldy does. Look, just look even too, like I mentioned with Nico Hischier at the IIHF tournament there. Boldy's playing amazing as well. But the difference between what Boldy's doing and what Nico Hischier's doing, like they both have 6 points in five games, but Boldy has 24 shots on goal in five games. That's ridiculous, right? Like he does that. He's just popping off. This guy's on his way up, and I just want to be there when he peaks. Okay. Get some Matt Boldy in your life. I'm actually going to have an interesting decision to make. I have a keep three league, a really high level league with really good players. And I have Boldy on my team. And I don't think I have a good chance of winning next year because I traded all my draft picks away. So I'm thinking about keeping Boldy like with 2 years in mind. You know what I mean? So, oh God, I don't know. I don't know if I want to let Boldy slide through my fingers here. I'm just a big fan of this player. So we'll see. Shout out to Matt Boldy. All right. The last player I want to talk about here that had a great second half breakout, Lucas Raymond of the Detroit Red Wings. And this was a surprise as well, right? I mean, if you look at Lucas Raymond, what he's been able to do in his first two seasons, he was up for the Calder in his rookie year there, 82 games, 57 points, really good season. Last season regressed a little bit, 45 points in 74 games. And then this season, 72 points in 82 games. And wow, yeah, kind of out of nowhere, right? Like, and he was a big piece for the Red Wings in their push to make the postseason, right? They obviously fell short, but it wasn't because of what Lucas Raymond was doing. He was showing up every night, you know, getting to work and putting some points on the board. So there's lots to like about Lucas Raymond, but there's also some red flags as well that I want to get into. Let's first look at pre-All-Star game. He had 42 points in 50 games, which is very good. And then post-All-Star game, 31 points in 32 games. So very consistent. Definitely played a little bit better after the All-Star break, but consistent all around throughout the season there. So what happened? Let's take a look at the metrics. Pre-All-Star break, shots to go per 60, 6.19. It's not great. Individual Corsi, 4 per 60, 12.45. Individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 7.69. Not awesome, right? Those are middling numbers. IPP, however, was not middling. 70.69%, which is borderline elite. That's definitely an offensive player, IPP. And his shooting percentage was 14.29, which is, yeah, pretty high. And then his on-ice shooting percentage, 12.21. So there's some things there where he was really popping off. And then if you look at what he was able to do after the All-Star break, his shots on goal per 60 went up from 6.19 to 7.42. So I like that. Shot attempts per 60 went from 12.45 to 13.28. Scoring chances for basically stayed the same. His IPP went up even more from 70.69 to 73.81%. But what really took off was his shooting percentage. Pre-All-Star game, it was 14.29, as I said. Post-All-Star game, 25.35%. That's over 31 games. That's Andre Kuzmenko stuff, all right? No, only Big Kuzi does that, damn it. And his on-ice shooting percentage went up a little bit to 12.46%. So obviously, we can see what happened there. This guy was converting at a ridiculous rate, an unsustainable rate, right? And we have to take notice of that. He had 12 points in his last 8 games, just trying to get the Wings into the playoffs there. And he was relied on as a top option when push came to shove. So that's definitely something that is in his favor. But I don't know. You know, there's some red flags with his statistical profile, and we gotta look into that. So I want to talk a little bit about what he was able to do. We'll talk about 5-on-5 because I do like to look at that. At 5-on-5, you know, his IPP this year was a career high, right? And by a mile, right? He had 75% IPP. Last year, he had 60 for reference, right? And then 65 in his first year. So he was IPP... And that's individual points percentage, right? That's the percentage of points when he was on the ice that he was in on, right? If that makes sense. But basically, it's just a good indicator of who's involved in the offense, like from his line, right? And he's, you know, anything over 70, like that's, yeah, we're getting into a really good offensive player there. So he really cooked there. Shots to go per 60, not good, right? 5.96 at 5-on-5. That's terrible, right? That's shocking. But his shooting percentage, we talked about that, highest of his career, of his 3-year career, right? But by a long shot. So he was converting. His IPP and his shooting percentage were redlining, right? We call those the luck metrics. There's a good chance those regress. Like they really should regress. So we have to keep an eye on that. And then his on-ice shooting percentage at 5-on-5 as well went nuclear. Like last season, for reference, 7.66. This season, 10.56. That's massive, right? That means, yeah, his line mates were converting at a ridiculous rate as well. So all this to say, these are all indicators. Like this is classic sell high stuff, right? He's a young player and he's on the rise for sure, but we need to temper expectations with Lucas Raymond. This guy didn't even get power play one consistently last year. And if the Wings, you know, if they move on from Patrick Kane, I would be a little bit more interested in Raymond. But as a back-end fantasy option, right? I just don't trust what's going on under the hood. This is a guy that just was really efficient. He was had an efficient year, and his teammates were efficient, right? He had a great contract year, though. So, well, I mean, we'll see what the Wings think that's worth, right? And if he gets a big payday, he could get featured a little bit more. But that's still not going to change the fact that he doesn't really shoot and he doesn't generate chances. Like on the season, 296 overall in shots and goal per 60, 232nd in individual scoring chances for per 60. That's not good. And this is an offensive player, right? So he was buoyed by big time efficiency with his shooting percentage, big time efficiency with his on ice shooting percentage, right? And his IPP. So I think if all those things regress, now we've got a player that doesn't shoot, doesn't get chances. And now all of a sudden he's not converting as much, right? So let's take that with a grain of salt. It's not a player I'm going to be in on, but it was a really nice performance post All-Star break nonetheless by Lucas Raymond. All right, we're coming to the end here. I did want to give a little honorable mention here. A player that did cook in the off after the All-Star break, and I was really shocked to see his name there. Filip Kurashev of the Chicago Blackhawks. What the hell? Yeah, let's dig in on Kurashev here. This is this 24-year-old beauty popped for 54 points last year in 75 games. Not bad. Really not bad. I mean, you know, 19 power play points? What the hell? He had an average time on ice of 19 minutes. This is the quietest 54 points, I think, of the season. Pre-All-Star break for Filip Kurashev, 24 points in 43 games. Post-All-Star break, 30 points in 32 games. Really nice end of the season for this guy. That led the team. That led the Blackhawks. Filip Kurashev led the Blackhawks in something, all right? I mean, Bedard had 3 fewer games, but still, like, he should be smashing Kurashev on the regular. So that's crazy stuff. You know, nice little season there. As I said, 19 power play points. That's really what did it for Kurashev. He was able to find his way on the power play. He had access to Bedard, right? You know, give the puck to Bedard. It's like that, you know, Fresh Prince episode where they're like, give the ball to Will. Yeah, that's what Filip Kurashev. He just gave the ball, he just gave the puck to Bedard, right? And that makes total sense. You know, I'm trashing this man, right? He's a really good player, but 19 power play points. I don't see how he does that again. And then if you dig in on 5-on-5 with Filip Kurashev, no, they're terrible. He was redlining everywhere. All those luck metrics we talked about. I think negative regression is assured. But it is nice to see that they have a player here, right? This guy's obviously a decent NHL player. I think he's serviceable. He can handle big minutes, that's for sure. He's played well over 20 minutes at times of the season. Average 19, as I said. He's able to play with good players and produce on the power play. I can't imagine that Chicago keeps their roster as is for next season. That just doesn't make sense to me. I think they're going to have to bring in some pieces to help Bedard. And I think that Filip Kurashev is probably going to get moved down the lineup, right? We got good young pieces there in Chicago. This guy had a great year, but maybe he can parlay that into, you know, playing somewhere else or another team and getting another opportunity, right? Because yeah, I don't see how they're going to trot this man out here again. But nice little season nonetheless. Shout out to Philip Kurshev. That's it, everybody. That is the episode. I just wanted to, again, bring your attention to a few interesting players and see what's what. Some of these guys I am going to be looking at. Again, like I said, Boldy is a really interesting one. Kadri is another one that I'm very interested in moving into next season. It's just good to understand why players are doing what they're doing. And, you know, players like Dylan Strome, even Gus Nyquist, those are guys, you know, those are last round flyer picks, last couple picks. You can pick them up and they can absolutely do stuff. So, I don't know, hopefully you found some value in this conversation. I am going to do a potential breakout episode. That's one I really like as well. Just trying to predict an early prediction of who I think is going to break out next season and why. So we'll definitely take a look there. I might have a guest for that one too. So I'm hoping for that. I'm going to start getting some guests here on the pod because I'm bored with myself. All right. And I like having other people's takes in here. Lots of good minds out there. But hopefully this brought you value, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate that. I will have another episode for you next week, possibly two. And we are going to get the return of Nate and Josh as well. Oh my God, I miss those boys. But we'll get back to business real soon. But in the meantime, celebrate your day. Bye for now. Make some noise.